Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. It's Friendsgiving, and with friends of the pod, Michelle and Maury, both she, her, are here. Michelle, first-generation Salvadorian entrepreneur, and Maury, relatively new immigrant to the U.S., science enthusiast, cooks her friends very hot, spicy food. And we have brought some dishes for you all. We're dishing out on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion. Miss Patti LaBelle caught up in another controversy and me going undercover into a new conservative social media platform like a Charlie's Angel. We also dish out on ways that you can celebrate Native American Heritage Day, which is the day after Thanksgiving. And Michelle gives us some much needed mental health tips and practices, believing in ourselves, redefining our value and community care as we end out this crazy year. It's time to heal up, feel the love. It's Friendsgiving here on Minority Corner. Friendsgiving, Friendsgiving, that's what this is, Friendsgiving. Everybody knows the annual traditional, or is it Friends Forever, Friends for All the Lives, the Saved by the Bell song that you're probably not the only people that don't know what I'm talking about. There was an episode when they were like, oh, we're in a band and we got really famous, but then Zach got too popular and then he got drunk and I think he almost died, and everybody was in the episode except for Jesse Spano. And in the episode, you can tell that it is not their voices coming out of their, like, those voices.
It's so bad.
Like, who's hitting that soprano? And they're just really badly, like, lip syncing. Watermelon. It's like, this is not you.
I'd never heard that song, even as a Save the Bell watcher as a youth, until you sent it to me.
You're welcome.
I've never watched the show, and I've never seen the video until you sent it.
Well, thanks to you all. For whatever reason, every time I see you, I think of that song. For whatever reason, clearly we have no actual connection to that song. To the point where the past few days, because we've been hanging out on Zooms, but in the past few days, I wake up and that song has been playing, and I think of you, Friends Forever. You do not look pleased about that.
Well, we can't really comment because we have no clue what it is.
That song means everything to me.
It kind of has like some of that like "Let the Sunshine In" beat. Let the sunshine.
That's true. Yeah, or at least the way that we're doing. Sunshine in your face. Yeah, that, oh man. But there is a Saved by the Bell reboot coming out. How are you feeling about that? We stoked?
Oh. We are feeling nothing.
Okay.
Is it going to be like Degrassi? Like some of them are the teachers
That is exactly what they're doing. So first of all, it's so Jesse's the principal, Zach and Kelly are, I think Zach's like the mayor, he's kind of like a douchebag. His son is also a loser, and not a loser, but his son is like, you know, I mean,
it like him
is a loser in the sense of you're just like, what a dick, you know? And so it's very like self-referential the way that they're doing it. My friend Shantira Jackson, she's one of the writers on the show, and they're doing it from like a different perspective where it's almost making fun of itself, because it's like the popular kids, it's sort of like the next generation of the Saved by the Bell kids, But there's this other group of kids, which I think it's like a Latina and like her diverse group of friends. And she's the one that like stops time and like talks to the camera. And she's like, this is stupid. Oh. And it's sort of just like they comment on like, it's almost like they're going back, re-looking at the show through a very 2020 mm-hmm. sort of lens. Yeah, everyone's back. AC Slater, he's there. Yeah, wow. Still looking hot as ever. Republican
AC
in the real
Slater,
life.
AC Slater, he does not age.
No, no,
oh my
not.
Goodness, those dimples.
I could put some things in those dimples.
Hottie. Which one is that?
AC Slater, Mario Lopez.
Oh, he's a Republican?
Yeah, sometimes what happens.
Oh, that's right.
I think, I mean,
oh, that's
too
bad.
I mean, I don't know who he voted for in this last election. I try to, you know, separate the art from the artist. But sometimes they just really like their money. I'm not excusing it, but that's a lot of times what happens when you're like, oh, this celebrity. Yeah. Like Sarah Michelle Gellar, she like was rumored to be a Republican for like a good while. I will say,
really?
Check her but her, who did she vote for in this last election? Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And she wrote a post. She was like, oh, thankfully I can like sleep tonight. And then, like, because she was just so relieved and she was, you know, just because many of us were after this election. And then people were just relentlessly attacking her for her views. It was.
Why?
They were just like, I can't sleep safely. Like, Joe Biden is going to, you know, make us all, you know, be child molesters.
Oh,
and
oh my God.
It's really wild. And I felt so bad because she's not such a politically active person. And it made me, I grew up watching Buffy and Sarah Michelle Gellar, and it made me appreciate and love her that much more that she stood, she said something, you know, she's been speaking out a little bit more. And I can understand why sometimes celebrities don't want to say anything, because like these folks were going, it was like comment after comment of just people bashing her and just trolls and, you know, Joe Biden stole the election. And just like, it is a different world. I know you're gonna talk about this later, Maury, but this is a different, like some people are just, we're so in our different silos that they're just getting a narrative information that I just wasn't. And I was like, Sarah Michelle Gellar, you slay these hoes.
I mean, as a public figure, you know, like as a public figure, there's you can't please everyone. And that's what it comes down to for her and for many of them. Right. Because you say one thing and then everyone else on the other side will attack you, especially if you're like a beloved character on a beloved show.
Or also, too, you can say something, and because I've been on the other side of this. So recently, I Gina Carano, she's on The Mandalorian, so show on Disney Plus, Star Wars.
Is that, is she the one with the
Cara Dune
drop?
She's,
that's her.
Oh, she got a teardrop. She murdered some.
No. She has like a teardrop mole.
Oh,
like she has it like right
okay,
there.
Boy,
right,
those,
that's her. No.
Because me and Michelle were like, oh, damn.
Wow.
Oh, boy. Cara Dune.
No. I just didn't. I was just trying to confirm if that was who you were talking about.
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember studying her face to that effect, but apparently she has a.
It's a pretty obviously prominent mole, but okay.
Fair enough.
It makes me think of Austin Powers with the little branch. No, anyone? Yeah. He like can't. It's too distracting, and I think it moves around his face. I don't remember.
Oh, I don't.
He's
I
a good sport about it.
I don't remember that part. But I have a difficulty separating the art from the artist, and that's the thing is that like so she is on the other spectrum of it, right? So like first I was like, oh, I love badass women in science fiction. I'm like, oh, this is so great, this is so dope. And then she opens her mouth on Twitter, and she's an anti-masker. She
oh god
oh no. Yes, yeah, and like her character's so
that's not even political. That's just dumbassery, but okay.
Her character is just like such a badass on the show, and like she, you know, she's got some Trump views. She is also like teased people from using like their pronouns. She used to be like a UFC like fighter or whatnot. And so she's just kind of a terrible person, right? And to the point where she felt like she was being bullied so much on Twitter. So there's the other aspect of it, right? Because, like, I'm on the other side of, like, to what I am seeing is, like, the normal sympathetic towards human beings and equality and equity side of things, you know? And I mean, I'm not going to go onto her Twitter and, like, you know, waste my time with that. But she's now threatening, not threatening. Well, I guess threatening, or she should go. But I don't know. Should she go? You're like, what are you talking about? She's going to this other social media platform called Parler. Have you heard about Parler?
Ugh, whatever.
No.
Yeah. It's like a it's a conservative platform, like an alternative to Facebook, which it's like, and yeah. So like, if you aren't in your echo chamber already, you're going to be in an echo chamber with that one.
Yeah, so she's been like, wow, maybe I'll just take my thoughts and opinions to Parler. And I find that so incredibly actually frightening. It's actually part of the discussion of why folks like at Twitter and Facebook, why they've been kind of pausing behind the scenes, the conversations that I've been hearing from folks that I know that work at Facebook and Twitter, of why sometimes they don't censor or take down some posts, because part of their fear is that these folks will go further into their own platforms and holes. And at least in some ways, yes, people are getting to their echo chambers. So sometimes, at least in some way, I would have a way to like see what this, you know, crazy person is saying, but they go off into their own platform. I mean, that's how you got Pizzagate happening. And then these are like, I mean, essentially like these online communities, they just become sort of cults where they just are all yes-anding. They're literally improvising in the wrong way. They are yes-anding in the wrong way, taking it to the next level, and there's no one to sort of challenge it. And I think that's just sort of frightening. So what I did was... you
go on.
So I went on the Parler website.
Oh, no.
Okay. I'm so
morbidly curious. I would totally go on, and I would totally, I want to see.
Yes, it's even this thing too where it's like, especially when the election stuff, when they were announcing, like I've been trying to like peep into like Fox News sometimes on their website, not their TV channel, but at least their website. It's just like, I just want to see what the other side is saying, you know, a little bit like, what's going on over here? Let me check in on y'all, because left to your own devices, next thing I know, you got tiki torches and hoods, white hoods on, and we need to like, you know, pause that in the action. So I went to the Parler website. It was just kicking the tires around. I'm thinking about going undercover and kind of being like similar to that guy that Maury, you sent me, that guy who was like, I'm a black man. And it turned out to be like, Patti LaBelle's.
Yeah. So it was like a representative of some, like a...
He had ran for government. He had ran for office, but he didn't... I don't think he was still in office. I know the corner kids are tweeting at us because they like lived for the story. But yeah, he was in office. I don't think he was currently in office, but he was at some point.
Yeah, so he's some sort of public figure, some political public figure. And he basically like tweeted something pretending as a black man, and so
Dean Browning was the guy's name.
Yeah,
his name is Dean
so
Browning.
He has, so that's his real name.
Yes,
the white
he's
guy.
A former commissioner of Lee County, Pennsylvania. Yes, and he was saying that he was Dan Purdy.
He has a burner account as a black man that he like tweets under, and he said
and this is it's a so white crazy. Ass man it's I'm a black so gay guy and crazy. I can personally say that Obama did nothing for me. My life only changed a little bit, and it was for the worse. Everything is so much better new Trump. I feel respected, which I never do when Democrats are involved.
The stupid thing that he did is that he accidentally tweeted that under his official account, under his like real white man account.
Yes.
Saying that he's a black gay man, and everyone's like, what? and then he switched, but then, you know, people are it's well, internet. Internet doesn't let it go.
And he's been doing this. And, like, everybody, like, Twitter, this is sometimes when, like, social media can do good, because Twitter kept investigating this whole entire situation. And they're like, hold up. And then they were seeing that he had this burner account where he was also, like, as this other person, he was, like, liking his own comments, like, retweeting it as this, like, black gay guy. And then he got some black gay guy to say, I'm Dan Purdy. And
this is real. This is real.
I really do say or think that. And then I think it was in that same, and then they had linked him to that, in that same video that he had posted, that guy who was Dan Purdy. There is a picture of him hugging Patti LaBelle. And it turns out that Patti LaBelle is his aunt, and that, like, he, because, and then they had deduced this from, like, in the video that he was filming, that in the background they could see a picture, and they were like, a painting, and they're like, this is the same painting in Patti LaBelle's house.
Twitter. I was wondering the Patti LaBelle connection, because I heard that. I was like, wait, where does she come in?
That, yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes, so, like, Twitter should be, like, solving crimes. Like, y'all, yeah. you know. Figure out what happened to, you know.
I mean, I can't believe, like, poor Patti LaBelle just got, like,
she didn't ask for this.
Dragged into and this mess.
Every holiday season, Patti LaBelle's involved in some sort of controversy. You know, one year it was Where My Backup Singers, unearthed from C-SPAN, where she couldn't find her background singers, and now this year is this.
It's her nephew who messed things up.
So I was inspired, long story long, circling it back, I was inspired by that guy. So I'm planning on going on to Parler and being a white, straight, conservative guy. And I'm going to comment, like, they're going to be like, Joe Biden, like, he is, you know, pedophile, and he's going to make us all drink the blood of goats. And I'm going to be like, hey, I voted for Trump, and I now think that it's time to sort of, like, move it along. Or, like, I'll just question things. So I'm just gonna, like, really pose as, like, and maybe get, like, I want to get a picture of, like, me, like, some, so I need, so Minority Corner, I need, they're having auditions,
gotta report, infiltrate,
report for duty, I need someone's photo to catfish us. If you are a white, straight man, and
get a picture of Paula Deen.
Send it to Minority Corner. I want permission, because I thought about this. I was like, maybe I could use one of my ex-boyfriends, or like, what?
Oh no.
But I would use, I'd use one of my exes from overseas, so they'd really be out of the loop. Like, but I want to make sure.
The internet is far reaching.
But wait, your picture is being used for good. You're going to be the good voice of reason in this white supremacy circle. Like, I'm going to be saying good things.
There's going to be people after them.
You know, you're like one of the, like, cute trolls. Like, the good luck kind of troll. With, like, the neon hair. And, you're up the belly and the voice.
And so I was on their website, right? I was on Parler's website. And I was kicking around the tires. And they were like, oh, well, we're, like, you know, for equality for everybody. And it doesn't matter your race, your gender, your sexual preference.
It's not sexual preference.
And so I then took it a step further. And so I emailed into support. And I just wrote subject typo. And I was like, wow, I've really been looking for a new social media platform ever since I saw The Social Dilemma. I've been on the lookout, and this seems like the right place. And I love that this place is so inclusive. I couldn't help but notice that there was a typo that said sexual preference. And I, you know, no one would ever choose to be the ridicule of, you know, hate or violence. So you will probably want to change this. Is there any way that we can get this changed to sexual orientation? How do we go about that? And so they have not.
Nice.
I'm still waiting for a response, and but I'm gonna go undercover. So I just need a white guy's photo, and if you have a gun, even better. Picture with a gun.
Oh my god!
American flag, America.
I need America on the flag and everything. So speaking of ways to heal, make America heal again as we go into this process. So it's Friendsgiving. We're coming together. We can't necessarily be with, you know, our families the way that we would really like to, and seeing other people. We all got together in the virtual space and watched the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion on HBO Max. How was it?
It was very moving. I mean, you know, I only watched the show after it was already done, and I watched it on syndication. But I can see the importance of that show. It like pushed so many, what's the word, envelopes?
It pushed envelopes, it pushed boundaries, it pushed carts. It was pushing things.
Yeah. And, you know, there was also some healing. There's some, you know, of course, Uncle Phil, where, you know, all of us were just like trying not to cry, but cry anyway. Yeah.
Oh, I all just crying. I think just we looked down at like the also sidebar. If you're looking for a way to like, we totally bamboozled finding, I feel like we totally like bootlegged the Zoom because we were able to like, I streamed it and then we all watched like the same. It was so great.
It was great.
Like, and it's so great just to check in with other people's reactions, like, oh, you laughing too? Oh, you do. And like, it was like, I'll never forget, there was this very early on, it was like everyone had like these smiling faces, like faces just so beaming. And how about for you, Michelle? How was watching it?
Oh my gosh. I'm like struggling for words. One, I thought it was, I get really emotional, especially if it's a story that I can feel like I can jump into and connect to.
Okay, and it's, if you're going to start crying right now, then I'm
no,
start
no,
crying.
It was just so beautifully
told.
Oh,
we're not doing that now? Oh, and okay, so, okay. I wasn't sure we were going to start crying.
Not yet. That'll be a little later. Okay. Don't worry. There's time.
Such a beautiful podcast.
It really is a beautiful story. And I thought it was, of all of the movies or documentaries or things that we've watched together, I don't know that the three of us specifically have watched other ones like that together, but I was really glad that we could watch it together, because maybe it's because it's a, mm-hmm. it's a story about a family, mm-hmm. a family on screen and off screen, that I really enjoyed getting to watch it with you guys, to laugh together about it and cry together. There were just like, there were way more. I was a super fan of the show growing up. It was a big part of my formative years, but I had no idea all of, and I don't want to give it away. I recommend everyone go and watch it. But there's just, like to Maury's point of like pushing envelopes, there was what we saw on camera. And then there was also so much, effort on a more deeper level to bring cultural relevance and truth to the script, to the direction, that I just wasn't aware of. And I think that made it an extra, extra special show, and something really, really revolutionary that kind of continues the progress as we try to progress to telling truer and truer, mm-hmm. more authentic stories.
Yeah, totally. And there was something too, just so like on like seeing them get, because we're not all able to join together the way that we like to this, you know, holiday season. Although like, I'm kind of fine with it. Like, I'm like, oh, sorry, I can't go. I just want to stay in my, I'm tired. I need some space. It's been a long year. I just want to eat some ice cream and, you know, watch some, you know, HBO Max, something or other. Some Titans. I'm watching Titans right now. Really good. Highly recommend. But yeah, so it, just getting to see folks like hugging each other, like coming together who have not been in the same space. Together, and there was something just sort of like, I didn't realize this, that the show had only been on for 6 seasons, and it's so, it's only just six years of my life, but like, you know, such four, like, mm-hmm. 1990 to like 1996. But it felt like, because, you know, with syndication, we'd all seen those episodes so many different times, and so it felt like they were a part of our lives for, you know, so much longer. And I think getting to come together to also like mourn the loss of like, you know, Uncle Phil, who passed away, I think back in like 2012, and getting to like go through that experience with them. And then also too, like the reuniting, this is in the trailer, so this is not a spoiler, but the original Aunt Viv, the original Janet Hubbard coming back. And it was just like a snap to them for bringing her back, because when Family Matters did their reunion, Judy did not get an invite back because she did pornography. And so they were like, Judy who? Judy, I don't. And then they were like, Judy, would you have liked to go? They, like, E.T. goes to her house and she's there. Looks like she's on her way to work. And they're like, would you like to go into the family reunion?
To like, to work?
Yes,
work,
to like, or, like, work. Oh,
no, shut
well,
your
not,
face.
Not like porn work. I don't know if she's still doing that work.
Oh, I thought you meant like work.
Yeah, she's got like, what, like dildos in her hand?
I don't know. Wow.
How do you even know? Like, I think porn stars go to work. Well, in the before times, they go to work just like the rest of us. They now also work from home. They shoot on the Zooms. They, you know.
That's fair.
But I was just so like, you know, snaps because like I've been following the feud between Will and Janet for so long. And I really recommend this is so if you don't have HBO Max, you can at least watch. I know you got the Facebook. And if you don't got the Facebook, log into someone else's account, which means do the same thing for HBO Max so you can watch this reunion. Just steal someone's computer. It's worth it. But they did a red table talk. So Red Table Talk is Jada Pinkett Smith's show, and it's good. Oh my God. Jada Pinkett Smith like brings people on like that she has had been rumored to have feuds with, or other people have had feuds with, or just to talk about like generational, like, you know, it'd be her mother and like Willow Smith, like talking about being like women of different black women of different generations. Like they'll bring a therapist on. Like it's like an intimate Oprah sit down table conversation. And so Will brought on a therapist to unpack his meeting with Janet, and they showed extended clips. Like they didn't show this in the HBO Max. They had to take a break because it just got so intense between him and original Aunt Viv in the show. And you start hearing just even more of like how he, you just hear like there's different, like she was only 34. I didn't realize this. Aunt Viv was only 34 when she started that show. Juilliard trained, and like apparently like in the last season, like there just was, he was had a lot of insecurities essentially. He, you know, he was 21. He felt like he just needed to like make everyone laugh. And what he really wanted, he needed like, Will Smith was talking about like how he was just that little boy who just needed her love and respect. And when he wasn't getting it, because in his growing up as a kid, his dad was abusive and he needed to make everybody laugh. And so that was his big thing. And she was like, he was like, you know, 21. He'd bring all his friends from Philly onto the set. And she's a Juilliard trained actress. And she's like, I need to prepare. I'm trying to like get ready for this job. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some tensions and stuff were happening. And he thought that he didn't like her. And so he's the big star. And so at one point, like, they were like, she couldn't leave her dressing room. They're like, you need to stay in your dressing room. And then they were like, you're only going to get 10 weeks because she was pregnant. They're like, well, you can only work for 10 weeks and you can't do any other work. And I mean, and she's pretty much, and he like, you know, said some bad things about her and she wasn't able to work afterward. He was Hollywood A-lister and she, her career
was robbed.
As
yeah.
As, you know, darker skinned black woman. You think about what she was robbed of. Mm-hmm. She only had 3 seasons. If she was able to finish out that show, she would. When you look at Felicia Rashad, you are like, mom. You know, like it robbed her of that experience of like what her career could have and would have been. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking. But I will say what's so warming to see 30 years later, and they said such terrible things about each other publicly, they healed, and that like healing is possible. You know, like healing is possible when you go through understanding, unpacking the trauma and the hurts that we have, and then getting to a point where it's like, I don't want to carry this burden anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hope that he gives her roles in his next movies and advocates for her, because 30 years is a long time for her to be not reaching her potential because someone else put an obstacle there. And I mean, I get it. He didn't do it on purpose. He was young. He didn't mean it that way. But I think he can make it up to her by making sure that she gets to reach her goals. You know?
Yeah. She, to the point where like, I mean, oh my God, she also talks about this of like her kids, like people would like, she gets, again, going back to social media, how it's trash. She was getting death threats on social media. They're like, I love Will.
What?
They're like, why aren't you dead yet? And it's like,
wait, what?
Whoa. Oh, her kid would get bullied at school. They're like, your mom's a bitch. And, you know, again, being a black woman, a darker skinned black woman, because also like I've used this as a joke before. I've been reverse Aunt Viv before, where they recasted me at my Marvel show. I make this joke. They recasted me on my Marvel show for a darker skinned black guy, which is, you know, doesn't really happen, you know, all that often with, because, you know, colorism or whatnot. So I guess, hey, I appreciate that, you know, he's getting work. But I've used that before. I got reversing at Viv, like, and you know, because there's only so few jobs that we ever have. And they did. They replaced her with a lighter skinned woman. She had so much less agency. Like, Aunt Viv in those first three seasons had like commanding charge. Like, there's the episode where Janet dances. Like, it's an iconic episode.
Yes.
It's so good. She just had so much more agency. And there's like, Aunt Viv never really had another episode, you know, like after that. So I like it more. You were saying, now he needs to put her to work, give her some jobs, because 30 years, her family disowned her because they're like, you're ruining our name. And people loved Will Smith and they loved The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It meant, you know, so much to people in the community, getting to see, you know, black folks, you know, be, you know, rich and wealthy, but so human. Like, there was such like a love dynamic. So he better, you know, give her some work.
I hope he does. I hope he doesn't just stop at, like, get a therapist, talk about it. Like, I want him to put it into action. It's all great. I'm not saying it's not. I just want to see it put in action.
Yes.
I have faith, because it's interesting, because he even says, because if you ever watch, like, Will Smith is, like, he really has this space, and he's very inspiring as an actor and as a human being. He really wants to do as much good as possible. And he says, like, this experience was, like, the antithesis of who I was or who I am. And he's, like, I didn't even realize I had this dragon, like, in inside of me. And it was a lot of, like, it's so interesting, like, you see how people's, he's still, he's 50 years old. He's still healing from his childhood self, and how it was so amazing. Like, you think this guy who has it all, how we all are still repeating these childhood family dynamics. He had pretty much imposed his family dynamic onto his play family, you know? And how often do we do that in our relationships with other people, where we keep playing those same family dynamics? Like, some of us are at, just had Thanksgiving. Maybe you got caught up in that. You know, how often do you have like the same, you keep dating the same person, or you keep having the same boss? Like, common denominator is you.
Our teams.
Teams at work. Right? The same sort of dynamics. And I bet if you trace those roots, they get even closer to your own family dynamic and how we learn to love and how we learned how to survive to be able to get love. And there's just such hurt and trauma around that. So go watch Red Table Talk, because that shit is good.
Yeah, I'll check it out for sure.
Hi, I'm Renee Colbert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like,
stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news. The reviews are in. Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
So it is the day. It's the day after Thanksgiving officially. It's right now. We're pretending like it's the day after Thanksgiving, and happy Friendsgiving. This is much better than the Friendsgiving that I threw when I was in Barcelona, and I had been backpacking. I had been backpacking for like 3 months, and I was like still away over Thanksgiving, and I was like, I'm gonna do a Friendsgiving. Well, actually, it was just a Thanksgiving because it was on the day of. Anyways, they don't celebrate that holiday over there. Why would they? So I got to just kind of make them do whatever I wanted. So me and my friend Gavin, we got, you know how we all traditionally wear sparkly top hats? So we got a bunch of those. And then we bought a bunch of dream catchers and wore those. And I made everybody who showed up wear them.
Wore a dream catcher?
Mm-hmm. Like little
aliens. How do you wear...
Wear the little earrings.
Oh, like a small one for earrings or like necklace Anyways, or something.
Looking back, I am not proud of that. I am apologizing to all of my indigenous friends and listeners, but you can't help it when you go to a different culture and you're like, you have to do this. It's part of my culture. And they're like, really? We really do this? And they did it. So are we just not confessing things that we've all done on Thanksgiving that we're not proud?
I just recently started celebrating it because traditionally, like culturally, we don't. But you know, my husband Chris, as you
who?
Guys know, he's been like whipping up the whole shebang the past couple of years. The turkey, the sides, the pies, and you know, my parents have been enjoying it, you know, because they've never done it.
But
so
this year,
it's been great.
When's that Thanksgiving dinner coming?
Yeah, when's that big ass bird coming?
Because he'd be bringing the Thanksgiving. I will say it is. I guess for myself, I know everyone is different, but like a lot of people are like, you know, and it's been a very tough year. I just feel like sometimes like the American privilege of things sometimes like all we're having to do is just this one holiday season. Take a chill pill. The light at the end of the tunnel is like almost there. Like who would have thought? I did not think a vaccine would be coming this close down the pipeline. And there's people who are just like, they're losing their shit and so irate that they can't have Thanksgiving to save lives. Y'all would not have survived during World War II or World War I, where there was a world war and a pandemic. Like, and you know what? Mm-hmm. They didn't have Netflix. Like, our Rosie the Riveter isn't like with like a strong arm or anything. Our Rosie the Riveter is sitting on the couch watching Netflix. Like, you know.
That's me.
You're
That's
doing
me.
It. You're doing it, Maury. You're yeah. doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maury, you're doing.
I am doing the doing... work. I am doing the it. The work that needs to be done, which is to stay
yes,
the fuck home.
That's the work. She's doing it.
And yeah. Yeah.
You're doing the work.
I don't know if you all knew this, but you know, fuck Thanksgiving because of the history of it anyways, we shouldn't be celebrating. What we should be celebrating is National Native American Heritage Day, which is the day after Thanksgiving.
Awesome. Yes.
So that is today. And so this day came about, just a little bit of a history of how this day officially came about. And it's still not enough. I can't just slap a day on it and be like, woof. We've done the work, because that's not, you know, still more work that needs to be done. Like, oh, well, you know, sorry about that, indigenous folks. But riding horseback from state to state in 1914, Red Fox James, a Blackfoot Native indigenous person, sought endorsement from 24 states in support of a national day recognizing and honoring Native Americans. And he presented these endorsements to the White House the following year. And while no national day was proclaimed, the state of New York declared the second Saturday in May as American Indian Day. I mean, this is 1914.
We've got a they tried.
Long way before, you know, baby steps. Moving the needle.
Yeah.
And then in 1986, so decades later, the 99th Congress passed a joint resolution authorizing the president to proclaim the week of November 23rd to the 30th back in 1986 as American Indian Week. Still have some ways to go. I can't believe that name is still... alive. The name is still there.
I mean, if you think about it, we only started saying indigenous yesterday.
We're working on it, folks. And then President Ronald Reagan did the only good thing in his entire presidency. And he declared the first American Indian Week that year and each year following of his presidency. And then President George W.H. Bush continued the proclamations until 1990 when he approved a joint resolution to declare November as National American Indian Heritage Month. Still, I hate saying this word, but this is what it was. And this tradition has continued annually. And then 2008, the Native American Heritage Day Act. Okay, there we are. 2008. Here we go.
2008.
Oh, get this. Native American Heritage Day Act was enacted by Congress and signed by President George W. Bush on October 8th, 2008. Yeah. So that's how that came to be about. And so today it is, we want to celebrate American Heritage Day today. And there are a few ways that I think that we all could do this, because I think it's just a lot of, like, you know, penance, giving back. Like, this is part of, you know, reparations for this community that was completely a genocide happen. We have done many episodes and corners about the genocide of Native Indigenous folks here in this country. So there's some things that we can do to help educate and celebrate. So you could read a story about or by Native American authors. So I'm going to put in a list. Look into the show notes. There's going to be a list of 14 contemporary books by Native American writers to get excited about. Some of these look really good. There's this one called Fire Song that has been on like every list that I've been looking at. They've been talking about Fire Song. So that is one to add. So also, as the new year, looking for Christmas gifts or Kwanzaa gifts or I almost said Shaka Khan. I'm sorry. What? Hanukkah. Hanukkah gifts.
Close.
Shaka Khanukkah. I could see the word in my mind and it just came out to like.
I mean, it's spelled like C-H. A, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. It reminds me of rest in power, Alex Trebek. But there's a Jeopardy question, and it was something about like asking about like who was like the African tribe leader, and she buzzes in and she goes, Who is Shaka Khan? And he goes,
no.
And then the next person buzzes in and they go, who is Shaka Zulu?
Oh, I remember this. Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's so bad. Do you guys remember the ones I sent? It was from, like, I think it was like, what's the one where they have to guess the letters?
Uh-oh. Will of Fortune?
Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where the guy pronunciates like Achilles heel. Achilles.
Oh, Achilles heel.
And then he didn't get it. And then the girl next to him.
And he had solved it. It was all there. She was like, let me just pronounce it.
Yeah, Achilles. Exactly. Oh, and I think that same segment had like him saying something else too. But yeah.
That was
pretty rough. I never knew until that one that you could get it wrong, but
it was a first.
It was pretty off.
I think that even Vanna White didn't know. She was like, "Oh, we don't give it away now." Okay. So also for the little kitties out there and the little young ones, and it's also important, like start them young. We grew up not learning the right history. We grew up saying the word Indian. So do better. There's going to be a list that we're going to send your way. 50 children's books that celebrate Native American and Indigenous mighty girls. So you've got like I Am Sacagawea, all kinds of Pocahontas and American Princess. Now, this sounds like the real story. You know, I love me some real story, you know. Redbird Songs, a story of Zitakalaza, Native American author, musician, and activist. All kinds. You got 50. There's a lot of Sacagawea. I mean, I think there's some other stories to tell, but another Pocahontas one. So you've got, another Sacagawea. I think 25 of these books are going to be Sacagawea. So you got your pick. You get the full Sacagawea collection. Also, I would like to point you into the direction of, Aneke did a roundup of children books that feature Native American women. So we're going to link that as well. And you can listen to the episode. We'll link it. The episode is titled Goop on a Mountain, Minority Corner, way back in the day.
Goop.
Check that one out. And then there's also a list that we have specifically for Two-Spirit queer Indigenous fiction. So there's a lot of great books there. So take some time. You know, part of being an ally for all of us is understanding and hearing these other stories that just do not get told enough. There's not enough representation of just, you know, Indigenous folks and their stories and their culture and their just, you know, way of thinking and thought. So pay homage to those whose land we stand on. You can also, we can't do this one right now, but maybe they do virtual tours, but you can virtually visit Native American museums or heritage centers. That one might be hard to do. You can also try delicious Native American recipes like pemmican, algonquin wild nut soup, or pasole with red chili. That sounds delicious. We'll link those in the show notes as well. You might fuck it up, but that's okay. You're trying. Unless you're married to a Chris. Then you're gonna probably
shade. Okay.
What? Chris is good. He's really good.
I cook too, you know.
Oh, that's right. You are a master baker.
And I cook too.
Oh, yeah. You make really spicy food that has almost murdered me a few different times.
Okay, listen.
Sorry,
you too?
Blocked it out. Oh, she got you too, Michelle. She tried to kill us. There's some hoes trying to kill people up in here.
Okay, listen. I told James, I was like, I will take responsibility for the first bowl you eat because I will take the responsibility. And I was like, but if you take second and third, that's on you.
Wait, I would like to pause in the action. So Maury is making Bangladeshi food?
Yes.
And you know, they like a little spice. And then Maury, you just hear, she goes, oh no, I put like 10 tablespoons of red chili flakes. It was supposed to be a half, 1.5. She put like 400% more than the recipe required.
It was supposed to be 1.5. I put 5. I mean, mistakes happen.
Yeah, so it was very delicious though, and I did go back for seconds. And it looks like she got you too, Michelle. You're like,
that's how I show my love, okay?
Sweat it out. If you're
I was actually
sweating,
gonna say,
the love's
it's
not
just
real.
Received. It's just received as love. Yeah, there's food laced with chilies since high school.
Okay, this one I think is probably like for those of you who are very visual and like you are just like, I just want to watch shit. Okay, I got you. I'm on the same page. Winter is here. I want to snuggle up and just be in front of my screen. Watch something educational and also giving, again, learning about other cultures. So we'll put a list. And these are all streamable. They're from Amazon. They're on Amazon and Netflix. So there's going to be a list that we're going to link. It's 10 best videos of Native American cultures available for streaming. There is American Experience We Shall Remain. That's on Amazon Prime. The Charlie Brown Thanksgiving The Mayflower Voyage. I've never seen this before, but it's on this list. And okay. Has anybody seen it? Can anybody corroborate? I had question marks about this. So
maybe it's culturally sensitive. This came out in the 60s. I'm like,
I have questions. You might see a little disclaimer that pops up in the front of it, like they do on like Disney Plus now. They're like, the views expressed on this were back in a different time. We do not condone these days. Yes.
They do that now?
In fact, on election day, we were doing some text banking, but we put on like, because we were so anxious filled and we were doing text banking, but we put on like Chippendales Rescue Rangers. We did Disney Afternoon. We had Chippendales Rescue Rangers on in the background. We had like Darkwing Duck. And on some of the episodes of Chippendales Rescue Rangers, they'd put a disclaimer that like some of the stuff in this is culturally insensitive. It was wrong then and it is wrong now, but we are still going to like, and boy was, they had some cats that were supposed to be from China that were Siamese, if you please, but I please do not.
It's like what is it? I used to love watching. I was a nerdy kid, and I always really liked classical music. But I loved watching Fantasia as a kid. Like that was like a Disney movie that I just like enjoyed the music and the dancing. And like, you look at it now, and there's a lot of those themes. Mm-hmm.
What part? I just watched it recently. No notes.
I wonder if they took it out. I wonder if they took it out from the recent ones, because the one that they had in there is really bad.
Oh, yeah, it was supposed to be like a tour of the world, but then it's basically a tour of like every stereotype across every country in the world.
Basically,
did I get
a cartoon?
Blackface character?
Yeah, you did.
Wow. Well, check it out. We'll put the list up there. Oh, The Song of Sacagawea. Okay, there's more stories to tell, I'm sure. But this is on Amazon Prime, 27 minutes, ages 6 and up. A lot of great stuff for adults and kids. So definitely, at least today, after this, go check out one of these. Do something for, Native American Heritage Day. And then You can participate in or watch a game of lacrosse that is, you know, from our Indigenous folks. And there's, you know, attend. There's probably some online seminars or events. Do something and then use hashtag Native American History Heritage Day to uplift somebody else. I don't want to see somebody who is not of Indigenous like descent to be like, you know, oh, look at me. This isn't about you. Like, maybe post some sort of a fact or a story. Like, I don't want to just put out this hashtag Native American Heritage Day and people like, I don't want some white woman running around in a headdress being like, I'm celebrating. You know,
do
I don't
people
want
still
that.
Do that at this point?
They don't if they're listening to this podcast. I know that. So tell your friends. Yeah. But this would be a great way to use your social media channels. I think not a lot. It's a great reminder of, like, you know, fuck Black Friday. Y'all shouldn't be going out shopping anyways. And, you know, just let's give back to these cultures who did so much, who also saved us in this election. Like, Native Indigenous folks rode in horseback. The Navajo Nation voted overwhelmingly, and they are getting hit by COVID so hard. They're riding in horseback to go and vote. So it's like we've got to get back and keep doing more for them. So let's celebrate.
Hey, friends. Jesse here, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have some really great news to share with you. This year has brought a lot of changes for all of us. And one tradition that we were grateful to be able to hold on to is our annual pin sale to benefit charity. This year, through your generosity and love of pins, you helped raise $95,400 for Give Directly. If you're a member and you bought pins, they'll ship in January. In the meantime, your support will provide direct cash relief to families impacted by COVID-19 across the United States. Even in this incredibly tough year, the Max Fun community remains extraordinarily kind. And whether or not you bought pins, you can continue to help by heading to givedirectly.org. And as always, thank you.
It's Michelle. It's her badass bitch corner, Michelle. She an HBIC, Michelle. Put your dick away, Jeffrey, too, baby. We doing business time.
Can you introduce me in all my meetings, please?
You're a resident HBIC.
Oh, my God.
Listen, put your dicks away, everybody, because that's not what we're doing here. It's not work appropriate. I still to this day do not understand how that happened with Jeffrey Toobin. I don't understand. We'll do a radio play of
like
a reenactment.
Why are you even?
As far as I know, this is what happened. Jeffrey Toobin, CNN, and they're like, you know, talking about like, all right, so the numbers and the data comes in, like, you know, not sexy stuff at all. Like, they're just talking about election night, how it's going to go, polls, and, you know, John King will be on his magic board.
And he was just like, I can't take it anymore. I need to whip it out.
No, they were like, that was the end of that meeting. And then he has another computer. And so he just walk. And
no.
I guess left this computer on and turned around to this other computer at like another desk. I don't know. And just started. And they're like, Jeffrey, we can see you.
And you're not on mute. You're not on mute. We really wish you were.
Could you imagine? You're like, the meeting's like, and I guess for one, maybe the meeting wasn't over, or like, but Jeffrey Dubin just like, I'm out. I gotta go jerk off right now. And then turned around to his other computer and just started flapping around.
Like, your need to jerk off is
so... You just walk away, pull over to the other computer, and just like, oh my God, they're jerking off right now.
The pandemic has not been friendly to folks living in a small square footage. Like, you got...
Yeah.
That's the same... That's your office. That's your kitchen. That's your personal
space. That's your
jerk-off
space. It's your home space.
I mean, Liz, all you have to do is turn the camera off. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
He was in such a hurry.
I couldn't...
He was in such a hurry.
He had to. He had to get it out.
Oh, I can't take it thinking about John King and that magic board and those numbers and the data. Oh my God. I just can't. And they were horrified. Like, I just keep picturing the people's faces who were just like, we can see you, Jeffrey Toobin. You're jerking off right now. So, anyways, speaking of, we're going to go to the workplace. I feel like, are we transitioning into, like, what not to do in the workplace? Is that number one?
If that wasn't already on the list, let's add it. I'm comfortable adding it. I have some things today. These can be related to the workplace or just kind of workplace, home, relationships with ourselves. I'm just going to be giving a lot of thought to where we are in the year, where we are in the seasons. For anyone who feels like time is like folding in on itself, we're in November. This is the week of Thanksgiving.
Oh. Wait, it was like March yesterday.
Right?
I was thinking about this. So the pandemic has been pretty much all of 2020, right? So I wonder, like, in movies, like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when they like time travel, like if they ever like, because you know sometimes like they'll just do like a TV show that's like an episode that takes place in 1988, right? Mm-hmm. If they ever will they skip over, like will TV never touch this year? Because you couldn't ever just like
will it be the 13th floor of the hotel where they just like don't.
Yes, they just never don't. Have characters, like no character was ever born that year, because you couldn't ever go back to that year without everyone have to be in mask and there'd be the background of the pandemic going around, right? Like, so just wondering if it's like the one thing that like TV and movies will never, like we never time travel back then. We never think like something like a movie like 5 years from now, and they'll never like have a character flashback to 5 years to back in 2020. They'll do either like 6 or 4. Like they just skip that year.
Or they will just skip, but then it would be an alternate reality where this didn't happen.
But
you know?
They couldn't. But I'm just thinking, like, everyday movies they usually will have, like, usually there's not something this huge that takes over an entire year. I'm even thinking, like, probably a lot of movies and TV shows, if you think about it, probably skip over the year 2001. Like, not a lot of things, unless there are...
That's true.
Unless they're addressing it. So I think, like Michelle was saying, it'll probably be the one, like, we won't do that one. Yeah. Unless they're, like, addressing it and bringing it a part of, like, the plot and the history. So, sorry, I digress. What about this year? It's been crazy. So crazy we can never feature it in movie and TV shows again.
Well, I want to take that and bring us present. So like, yes, there has been a ton going on this year, obviously. The pandemic, social injustice, loss, creativity and collaboration and innovation. But I wanted to remind us here that it is November and it's the week of Thanksgiving because I needed to remind myself. I live by myself. I work from home. Thankfully, I feel very grateful that I can still work and that I can work from home. But I have to remind myself why the days are getting shorter and welcome that. I felt like I needed this reminder, so I'd share it with you. But it's a natural time of the year to slow down, to prepare to hibernate. And so you're not alone if you're feeling a little tired or achy, maybe lacking in motivation, or if it's kind of harder than usual to concentrate. Mm-hmm. That's even if there wasn't a pandemic going on, that's where our minds and our brains and our hearts would go. And so I just find, you know, our Western culture praises the grind and being that worker bee and being that person who is always busy. And there's a certain like badge of pride if someone says like, how are you? And you respond, oh, busy. I'm so busy. Right. And it's like, is that how you are? I hope not. I hope we can get to a place to be able to check in, at least be honest with ourselves of how you're feeling, separate to how full your schedule might be, which is totally valid. I'm not saying don't be busy or that arguing that you're not. But it can sometimes get conflated with, like, how we're feeling right in this moment.
Such a badge of honor. I think you just said that. But it is, like, we are just how yeah, like it almost would feel guilty if you weren't. Like, yes. It's almost like, how busy are you? Oh, I'm too busy for this. I'm too busy for that. Like, ooh, if I'm so, everyone's just so exhausted. Mm-hmm. Something that we have talked about before, but it's sort of like in society, I don't want to steal your thunder, but in this culture of in America, we value suffering so much. It's almost like you feel guilty. It's like, how are you doing? I'm really great. Or you either have to be really, really great to justify it, or it's hard to just be like, I just am, you know, or I don't really know. Like, I am, you know. And that's okay. Like, it's hard. Like, it either has to be like, I'm so busy. Oh my gosh. And I'm so stressed, or I'm doing all these things, or, oh my God, I'm so amazing. I'm really great. But then I feel guilty because like nobody else is really great and amazing, or why should I be? And oh wait, I'm suffering too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And with that, there's this certain fullness, this expectation that a full calendar somehow translates to not only a busy person, but an important person.
Oof.
I feel important.
Girl, you mean, is the yeah. library open? Because I'm feeling too seen. I feel like Jeffy Tuber, you're watching me jerk off.
Oh, God. You're feeling, suddenly feeling like you're taking care of business in front of your calendar.
Yes.
And so I wanted to offer up, I have something that may be a little bit eye-roll-y. But like the word gratitude is thrown around a lot for Thanksgiving. But I think like this year has probably been, you know, I am, for those of you who know me, don't know me, I'm a banker entrepreneur by day and a yogi, not only by night, all the time. I teach and I'm a student. I've been a student for a long, long time and I love it. But like this year, as I imagine for many people, like, there so many months when I would hear the word gratitude, it was just this big, like, deep eye roll for me. I'm like, or even when I would try to take it seriously and sit and do a gratitude meditation, like, it's been hard for lots of reasons, and certain days harder than others, to come up with that list. And so I have not lost faith in the exercise. I still see a big, big value in it, big, big healing in it. And I just wanted to offer up something that helped me in doing that. So I think I'm a total journal convert this year. Artist's Way, life changing, and got me into Morning Pages.
I've done the Artist's Way 3 times. I've only finished it once.
Oh,
it
my gosh.
It is by Julia Cameron. It's a 12-step program for recovering artists, and everybody is a recovering artist, and you're going to, it's a workbook essentially to unpack just a lot of our own blockers, and we all have our own blockers in our own lives, and we're all artists, or if you think about it, artists, we create, and so somewhere, you just sort of got to unpack your bullshit. You have to do artist dates, which are just so helpful, and you do the Morning Pages, like, I've only finished it once. I've done it 3 times, but a lot of times what ends up happening, the book is so magical because every time like I've ever started it, I've never been able to finish it because so much abundance, I'm not going to say the word busy, so much abundance started happening in my life. And I remember a director was like, oh, you're too busy to finish the Artist's Way. That's great. And I was in a rut beforehand. Every time I've been in a rut and I've done that book, it has been life-changing, opening after a breakup, after a rut. Like, it is just, it's great.
Would it help me, a non-artist?
Yes.
The opening thing I said was everyone's an artist. Everyone is an artist. And see, girl, go get that book. Because you got, because those are blockers that are telling you that you're not. And something has like told you that.
It's been.
You got to do it. You got to do the work. You got to do the book.
It's been hugely.
You got to do the work. Because the work's got to be done.
It's been hugely helpful. I consider myself a creative person, but it was surprisingly helpful in helping me build and continue to build self-confidence in my work as a founder, as an entrepreneur, particularly in a male-dominated space in banking and technology. And I never would have considered the work that I do creative in that way. But it's been really freeing to have that kind of safe space. And something that, like, it's you can do it as a group, but it's also like very personal. And it doesn't cost any money to do it. So yeah. Oh my God, go get the Artist's Way. I
Wait, is this like a real book, or you like print out like worksheets?
It's a book. It's a workbook. So it's set up in a 12-week format.
I've done it so many times. I was trying to see if I can find my copy. It's in shambles. Like, it's pages are coming out. I've done it. Oh, here's my copy of The Artist's Way.
It's well loved.
Oh, is it two? These pages got to stick with it. They got to get these pages together. And now back to our regularly scheduled
program. Yeah, no, I'll definitely, I will definitely check it out. I mean, you know, we have these ongoing conversation about self-confidence and believing in yourself and, you know, just being good to yourself. Yes. I am very interested.
So interesting. Like, it's that thing that, like, you know, my therapist was talking to me about. Sorry, we're just, I'm
hijacking. I think you like the topic I brought up.
It's what I do. So this will connect. So talking about believing, it always seems so hokey. And anybody you ever who's, you know, really had, you know, levels of success. Remember, we talked, like, Will Smith, we talked about when we watched, you know, even he has these childhood trauma. Like, everyone's got their traumas and their shit that they're working through. Anybody who's ever made it, like, they always say, believe in yourself, believe in yourself. And after a while, it just kind of sounds like it's just words, right? Okay, yeah, believe in yourself. But you really do. You really do. It starts with that, and everything starts from within, and twofold, because, you know, I was saying to my therapist, I'm like, oh, you know, I haven't really made it so far as an actor because I just wasn't, you know, working hard enough. And he was like, do you think Pamela Anderson Lee was working hard enough? No, but bet you still believed in herself. And she was like, okay, I'm going to go do this thing, right? There's just a power of just, like, believing. Even, like, you know, Lady Gaga, like, really believes in herself. And I'm not saying she shouldn't, but, like, all of these people, to a certain degree, have believed in themselves. And you start to see when they aren't believing themselves, when you can start falling into, like, drugs and or even just where work starts needing to fill it up. And so we had talked about this, that, you know, the certain trends in your life will continue. And like, for myself, like, even though I'm just now kind of full time right now, as there's a pandemic, the industry is just shut down, so I'm working full time. I have translated so much, like, my value into my output of what I've been putting out. What are my success stories week by week? What are my numbers that I'm hitting? What are the things that I'm accomplishing? And, like, every week you just have to, like, and it's this rat race. And it's like, if I didn't accomplish something this week, I feel like I had no value. Same thing as an actor. I felt like I didn't have any value if I wasn't doing a show. I wasn't outputting anything. And that has nothing to do with who I am as a person. I remember my therapist used to say, who are you? I'd be like, I am an actor. He's like, that's not who you are. And it never made sense to me until recently. I mean, these past few, it's the thing that I do. Oh, who am I? I am a black gay man. No, that's not who you are. That's not the essence of who you are. So I just was, what I'm hearing from you, it's sort of like us putting our value on these external things. And if we keep doing that, we're going to be a bucket with holes in it that will never get filled up. And so the work has to start from within. I've been working and doing my affirmations in the morning. Shit works. You seem like, oh, why am I doing that? Like, look at yourself in the mirror and say, I am sexy. I am talented. I am brilliant. I am successful. Whatever it is that you know that you need to hear, and you fucking look at yourself and love yourself. I'm a hoe. Like, whatever it is that you need.
It works.
Sorry. I'm done. You go back to what you were saying.
And it's very much, to me, all those things, it's very much like healing the physical aspect of a body. When you're going through an injury and you ice it, you rest it, you elevate it, maybe there's some physical therapy, because as it was healing, maybe some different muscle groups were taking over, and you were using those instead of the major muscle groups, and now you've got some soreness or some misalignment, and you just, you know, you work through it. And there's no, generally when it's a physical injury or something physical to heal from, there's no judgment around it. It's like, the leg is broken and this is what you do, and this is about how long it takes, and everyone's body heals differently. But when it's something that doesn't have a visual cue, that is on the inside, there's all these taboos around it that don't allow for this very natural aspect of the healing. So I was really moved by The Artist's Way, in many reasons, but what I love about the morning pages is it's become a morning ritual for me, but it's also something I'll do throughout the day if I just like, if I feel like my internal dialogue is spinning and I either don't know why or I do know why and there's something I'm really harboring on, I'll just start writing. And it's the important thing is that it's not meant for anyone else to read. It's just for you. You can burn it. You can shred it later. You can tuck it away if you feel like you want to save it. The part of the magic is committing to writing a minimum of 3 pages nonstop and just keep moving the pen. Keep moving the pen, even if you're like, there's no way I can fill that. And I'll give a little bit of a spoiler. There's some magic that only clicks, that only really opens after kind of the middle of that second page. And so it's very similar to like meditation. If you have a meditation practice and you can kind of get the sense for the difference between sitting for maybe 2 to 5 minutes and sitting for 10 to 15 or 20 minutes, it takes our body, it's all good. I'm not knocking short meditation. But if you can sit in it just a little bit longer, it naturally takes our body a minute to release and sit into it, and then some of the good stuff starts. And so if you cut it off before then, you might be missing out on some magic that's not like, it's not being withheld, it's just like you just gotta sit in it a little longer. So to me, if you can, commit to the 3 pages. And the reason I bring it up right now is not necessarily to, if you wanna do it every day, cool. But this is specifically around like a Thanksgiving reflection, a Thanksgiving meditation. It doesn't have to be on Thanksgiving. I realize it's Friday, but it's taking a moment in this part of the season as we slow down, as it's cold outside and it's natural to want to kind of get cuddly and close and warm, taking a moment to write and reflect what is working for you in your life right now. I know it could be tempting to think about all of 2020 and all of what's going on, but right now, what is alive for you? What's working and what's not working? And with each of those, the what's working can be really, really helpful fodder for that gratitude meditation. And if it's hard, because sometimes for me, it's really hard to think of things that I'm grateful for in that moment when I'm sitting in grief. I lost 2 uncles this month. My dad a couple years ago, so the holidays are always hard. When I'm stuck and I'm like, fuck this place, I hate it here. I don't know. And I just like, I can feel this little kind of like rebellious kid in my head. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have anything. I try to go smaller. Go smaller. What's something small? Maybe I have a cup of tea and it's the lavender chamomile one that I like. Or maybe my dog, Pepita, like, didn't bark her face off today when I was on my call. And that was really nice because it let me focus.
You got legs.
Or one of my favorite.
Sometimes I go just like, I have a body. Like, I am healthy. Like, my therapist told me, listen, you guys are lucking out. Everyone, all of y'all listeners are lucking out because I'm back in therapy. So I'm just giving you all my good goods. Our job right now is to survive the pandemic. Number one job. Like, it's a huge deal. My therapist worked with ACT UP. He survived that pandemic with the AIDS, you know, pandemic that had happened. So, you know, that is our job right now. And it takes an emotional toll. It takes a toll. And so these practices are so helpful to help with the trauma that we're also living through and needing to come and do the work to also heal it when we come out.
It's also okay to pay attention to the things that aren't working that come up in your list. That's another one where I think it's helpful to notice what's not working. But for me, if I just stop there, then I run the risk of kind of spinning out on it or only kind of focusing on maybe the negative of it. Not that negative is inherently bad. We need positive and negative in everything. But I kind of tend to veer away from what's actionable and what can actually help me. And so that's another area where I find getting smaller, more granular is helpful too. Whether it's a personal relationship, something in our family or something broad, like injustice in our country, getting smaller, I don't mean diminishing the experience, but I mean giving thought to what it is that we are upset about, that we feel sadness about, that we are grieving and going a level deeper. What is it underneath that and underneath that and underneath that? Because we may not find, you know, world peace for ourselves in this one exercise. But it starts to get, it helps our brain start to try to work towards the seed of what we need to feel safe or feel like we're contributing to the safety of our home and for others. And so you may have a magical moment and this journaling may bubble up a solution for you. That would be really cool. That generally only happens a couple times for me. That's not the normal. I like to sit for a few minutes of meditation after, because I find once I've been able to like mental mind vomit everything on the page, one, it's a little bit easier to sit still for meditation because I've given those thoughts a voice and a place. When they're on paper, they're not forgotten, they're not dismissed, they're not judged, they're just there. And I know I can go back to them if I want, but it helps really kind of like clear. It's like cleaning my desk before approaching a new project. And then when I sit for meditation, that's when sometimes really interesting insights can drop in, because you can now you've cleared out some of the noise. You have a more direct kind of line of sight to your subconscious, to, if you believe that, you know, we're all connected, to whatever you see as source. It's talking all the time, but it's really hard to hear it. And these are exercises to kind of help clear that noise so you can hear what's been there.
Well, like something too, when you get smaller, even like when you look at these big, large world issues, it's hard to say, of course you'll be anxious if you're like, oh my God, there's so much like chaos in the world. But if you start looking and peering at it smaller, then you can think about like, what is it that I have that I can, what are the things that I have control over and that I can make effects and changes of, or even things that I want to fight for, even as we are like organizing our movements, our progressive movements. If we get more specific and on a smaller level, then it makes the bigger steps so much more easier to sort of, you know, to take on.
Yes. I love that you mentioned that too, because those are things, those are not only important, they're it's imperative. When things like the year that we've had in this country and in the world, of all of the things that we may be feeling, one of the most dangerous is powerlessness. Because when you've gone long enough feeling powerlessness, and it's that steady drip. It's the frog slowly boiling. It's not noticeable, but when it's incremental, it's very dangerous because it sneaks up on you. And we've talked about analogies around, like, you know, people being held imprisoned in some way, but then later learning that the door was never locked, and maybe they knew the door was never locked, but it was something beyond that that was keeping them there. When we experience a state of powerlessness long enough, then you shift to this sort of ambivalent, well, what difference would it make anyway? And that's really, really, really dangerous. That is not a healthy place to be. That's a place where it's separate from general frustration, feeling like we tried something and it didn't work, and it starts to shift into the realm of I've been thinking about the topic of suicide, because the holidays are generally a time when that comes up for a lot of us. And I'll make sure James has the phone number in the notes, but so that everyone has it, the National Suicide Prevention Line is available 24 hours. The languages are in English and Spanish. It's 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255. And it happens for all kinds of reasons. I'm not going to pretend I could ever begin to diagnose anyone. But the reason I mention it's such a dangerous shift in our minds is because it's something so relatable. Like, it's something like so, so, so common. I've felt that before. And when, like, to your point, James, when you do go a little bit deeper into what is causing the discomfort and look for actionable ways, even small ways to participate in making a change, that brings you back into the seat of your own power. And that's where that we can pull ourselves out of that powerlessness feeling, even if just little by little. And that is a really important healing that I think we all need, especially after a year like this.
Well, and connects us back to our own humanity. And part of our own humanity is, you know, when I say I am not an actor and I'm not just a black gay man, I am a human being on this earth. I'm a human. And but part of being a human being is being in connection or being connected to it, whether it's physically or not, but knowing that, like, I am connected to everyone and everything as well, right? Like, that we're all connected in this way. And so I think when you do that, it snaps you out of your own sort of self. Sometimes when you get into these places of depression or anxiety, what happens is you're so focused on just, like, you're looking at something through tunnel vision, essentially, that you're only, it's so small. Whereas, like, wait, you have if you can get a 360 view of everything, you can see, oh wow, there's green grass, there's, you know, all these things. It's not just this burning, you know, toothpick house in front of you. And I say that because, like, you know, it's just a little toothpick house. Like, that's, and you're just staring at that. If you look at just that, then it's like, yeah, the whole entire world, everything is sort of burning. But if you open that up, and sometimes, like connecting with others or doing something else for somebody else or a community or being involved in just whatever way that you can in a movement, it snaps you out of your own self and you start connecting to others and realizing your place in humanity and in the whole entire world. I think that there's a new word that I let to become a buzzword, and that, you know, I think we're getting really good at not only self-care, but community care. You know, I think that that's where a lot of the problems has come, because that's why so much depression, anxiety happens, because we're so filled, so disconnected. And so we're so focused on just the self. But if we find ways through, you know, put on your own oxygen mask first, absolutely. And I think we have these tools, the tools that Michelle's also has been talking to us through. But if you can, like, and Michelle's really good at this, but, like, giving a gift to somebody else, even if you're like, I feel shitty, give something to somebody else and see what will happen. Even if it's a smile, if it's a thank you card, if it's, you know, some sort of gratitude to them. Because it'll make you feel good, it'll lift, you know, them up, and I think we have to get back to a space of, you know, taking care of each other. Well, I want to thank Maury and Michelle for being here on the show celebrating Friendsgiving with us. Let's jump into our fact check from last week. Is also our tweet of the week, and that is coming from at Mr. Shouty, who tweeted at us. At Minority Corner just finished your latest episode and wanted you to know that while you are correct about the regular minimum wage in Ohio being $8.50, the minimum wage for tipped employees is $4.35, and federally, that minimum wage is only $2.13. I'm throwing up. This is not okay. I am so sorry to everybody. That is, like, borderline slavery. That is insane. We have to do better. We have to fight for a $15 minimum wage. And by the time we get that, that's even going to be not enough. Thank you for letting us know. Remember, you can find us on the Twitter as well. Oh, and one thing I wanted to add too on the Freshmen to Bel-Air reunion, something I thought was so fascinating, is that there were no black writers on that show, at least, you know, not for the majority of it. And so by the time they got to, like, Tuesday, Wednesday is when the actors, the black cast, was able to really help turn the beat around on making it more culturally appropriate. I just think that's so fascinating. So many of the shows that we grew up with that might have had black facing families, Family Matters for one too, was actually a spinoff from Perfect Strangers, and it was a white writer's room. So it's just incredibly fascinating. It's almost like a form of blackface, but not, but just, you know, we move those needles, and I'm grateful that now we have, you know, so many other black shows, you know, Kenya Barris and many others, where it is these, you know, sitcoms written by black writers or Insecure. I will say I do miss the sitcom. Can we bring it back? I think there's something about a live studio audience, everybody getting to, like, hearing that laughter, like genuine laughter. And, you know, there's no more event television. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was a time, you know, an era. There used to be a time when we all used to watch things at the same time. And now we're all watching things at different times. So I don't know. How do we watch things together? More Zoom streams? Highly recommend. Well, I hope you all are having a wonderful, safe holiday weekend if you are off, and if you are working, Be safe out there. Be safe out there in general. The numbers are rising. It is, you know, no joke. Go back to where it was when your mindset of where you were in March. Take this very seriously. Light it to the end of the tunnel, but we all have to do our part. Happy Indigenous Heritage Day. That's what we should change it to. I think it's national. It's also a little fact check, or a little, you know, what we should be doing is actually calling it National Indigenous Heritage Day, not Native American Day, because not all of them would consider themselves Native Americans, and I think we all know why. So whatever you do, celebrate, acknowledge, and give thanks and gratitude. Take care of yourself, and I love you all so much. Thank you to Sarah. Thank you to Sam, working behind the scenes to make this show go, and thank you to all of our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner. I'm grateful for all of you. I just am so grateful. You have no idea. I love you all so much. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.